Thanks so much for joining us on Wisconsin Public Radio News. Larry Mueller here, and we have a great summer read to recommend to you today. Author Andrew Graff is back with us, and his new book is called True North. Andrew grew up fishing, hiking, and hunting in Wisconsin's North Woods, and this novel is his second book set in that area. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have for him about the book or about writing? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Andrew Graff, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Hi, Larry. Thanks so much for having me back again.
I tell you what, I have to say, just before reading your book, I had picked up a copy of Remarkably Bright Creatures by Shelby Van Pelt. And I kind of felt the same way after reading your book that I felt after reading her book. The characters, you grow to kind of love like the characters a lot, foibles and all. You do such a nice job of writing, just as Shelby did with her book. And the ending of the book in both cases was a little uplifting. And I thought, well, here's a couple of books I'm going to put on a par. They're both really good. So
that's fantastic. I love Shelby Van Pelt's Remarkably Bright Creatures. I actually teach a course at Wittenberg University called the Feel Good Book Club. Uh-huh. And Shelby's is one of those novels for sure. Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, it was a nice book, and you have a nice book. And paddling, of course, in the first book, your book that we talked with you about, and by the way, was on Chapter a Day, was read on Chapter a Day. That was about paddling. This one is about rafting, kind of. I mean, that's part of it for sure. Yeah. And you've done a fair amount of rafting, have you? I looked in the acknowledgments, I read those at the end, and you have a fair amount of experience with it.
I do, yeah. I began rafting when I returned home from the Air Force. I was a college student at Lawrence University in Appleton, and I started whitewater rafting on the Piers Gorge section of the Menominee River, just in between Niagara, Wisconsin, and Norway, Michigan. And it's become one of the great loves of my life. You know, it's kind of a silly passion. It's like, what do you love to do? Be in rivers and rubber boats, but yes, and I can't stop. So these days, I live down in Ohio, and I get down to West Virginia on a part-time basis and guide rafts on the New River and on the Gully. So it's something I've done for a long time. It's been a rich part of my life, and I definitely wanted to write about the river and the river guides.
Yeah, the river guides are pretty cool. Well, you still get have time to get back up here, by the way?
I do. I'm here right now, actually. I'm I'm on vacation, so I'm up here for a week for the 4th, visiting my brother and family in the Fox Valley. We're headed up north to Lake Superior to see some more family. We're looking forward to stopping at a fireworks stand on our way this afternoon and getting ready. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
So what draws you to the woods of Wisconsin as the setting for your books?
It's where I grew up. You know, the 1990s North Woods of Wisconsin is home. And you know, I tell my writing students, it takes years to write a novel. So if you're going to close your eyes and visit somewhere and imagine it thoroughly, you may as well close your eyes and visit someplace you enjoy, you know? The very first book that I ever tried to write, which never sold, it's still in a sock drawer, I worked on that for 7 years, and that was based on my time in the Air Force, particularly in Kandahar, Afghanistan. And, you know, like, the 1990s Northwoods is just a more pleasant place to go in my imagination. So, yeah, when I finished writing Raft of Stars, which takes place in the fictional county in the Northwoods, I knew I wanted to keep writing about the woods and the rivers and the pines. Yeah, it's home.
You do such a marvelous job about describing the place. I can picture it so well as you write about it. Maybe before we go any further, maybe we should talk a bit about the book itself without giving away the whole book. I mean, tell us what True North is about.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So True North overall is a book about expectations versus reality. And what do you do when expectations and reality bump heads? So the basic plot, a young family, Sam and Swami Brecht and their three kids, pack it all up in a camper van for the summer and head north to the fictional town of Thunderwater, Wisconsin, where they are taking over a sort of defunct whitewater rafting outfit from their eccentric Uncle Chip. Sam is the dreamer. He's putting it all on the line. He hopes it'll turn out well. But reality does not meet his expectations. So they have to pull it all off by the end of summer. This young family who's sort of in financial straits, their relationship is rocky, and the foundations of this business they just purchased are certainly rocky as well.
Yeah. The relationship, how difficult was it to write about the couple's relationship and problems, I guess you could say?
Yeah, not very. I mean, so the book has two point of view characters, and it's Sam and Swami. It switches back and forth. I think the most important part to me while I was writing it is I wanted to be even-handed. And it was interesting to throw these problems into their lives, like as in you just put it all on the line for this defunct rafting company and you're living in a camper with your three young children. It was interesting to explore that from both sides. Yeah. Give a chapter or so from Sam's perspective, his hopes and expectations, and then watch how that mirrors or rather does not mirror his wife's reality, you know, and what she's experiencing there. The whole book in general was, so I've like had this long time dream of just cashing in my retirement and buying a whitewater company and living my life, you know, with my family. So this True North is a way for me to do that without actually torpedoing my real life, you know?
Oh, yeah, my goodness me. You've got a pretty good life right now. You've got a nice family. You get to go off, apparently, and raft in the summer sometimes.
I'm very happy and very thankful for every bit of it, yeah.
So yeah. Why do you think Sammy and Sam lost their way? What is it about them?
I think they lost their way in the ways that so many of us do. So, you know, Sam and Swami met when they were college students on their summers off as raft guides down in West Virginia, of all places. And they had dreams, they had visions. And then they got married, they have three kids, and reality starts to creep in, you know? And to be perfectly honest, like the more families that I get to know very closely, when we're not just on an Instagram sort of level, we'll admit that at times marriage, family life, all of this is extraordinarily difficult. So I wanted to I wanted to just sort of honor that and write a book about people, a couple who is right in the thick of things, in all the difficulties, financially and otherwise. And honestly, like no spoiler alert, but I wanted to work on a story about a couple that made it. I wanted to hope for them and root for them as I wrote them through that summer.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there, you know, it might not be a bad place for you to read something. Have you got something that you like to read from the book?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy to. I do have one, a shorter selection that I'd like to read today that sure. I think speaks to the idea of expectations versus realities out there on the river. So this has to do with this scene has to do with Sam's uncle Chip, the old Salt River guide, and they're taking over the rafting company from him. Sam in this scene is worrying about his uncle's future as he retires. What is Uncle Chip gonna do without the river? So here goes. Life changed. The river rose and fell. It was okay. It's what was. Sam was so tired of fighting against what was. Besides, he assured himself, if anyone could live a hard scrabble life of venison jerky and canned tomatoes and wood heat, it was Uncle Chip. That man could thrive under a tarp. As they drew near to Sand Portage Rapid, Chip did something Sam found beautiful, and it removed all pity Sam had felt for the man. Chip buckled his faded helmet onto his head, wrapped his old life jacket around his body, wedged his foot under the thwart, and then leaned out and patted the river the way a person might pat the arm of an old friend. Framed in by the pines of the island and the shore, with the glassy black horizon of the rapids before him, Chip was a king, bathed in riches. Chip had lived, as others had spent their best years tied to desks and machines in tan-colored rooms. Chip had been out here for decades, breathing in pine, tasting the river on his lips, shaking his beard, warming himself on silt-colored rocks, a raft guide.
That's a beautiful piece from a Chip. Chip is a great character.
I
really like Chip. but he never seems to have really quite grown up in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a river guide. He never got the office job, you know? So it was fun to write about the raft guides. So, I mean, whitewater subculture is sort of like an inland surf culture. And the river guides that you can meet in the novel are the river guides you can meet at pretty much any rafting company throughout the United States. There's Uncle Chip. He's sort of the old salt, the old sage of the river. There's Randy. He's sort of the local good old boy who's, you know, in the flannel shirt, but also a great river guide. And there's Moon. She's definitely the mystical river hippie with the tattoos up her legs, and she smells of patchouli oil. So it was so fun to finally write about the river guides that I love so much.
I met a gal like Moon at a resort in Waskasoo, Saskatchewan. And I thought of her immediately because she was just... That's exactly, Lynn was her name, is exactly the same as yes. Moon.
Yes. Yeah, they are real people, these characters, right? Not based on any one individual, but yeah, we're out there. These river guides are definitely out there.
You know, it's possible, you know, thinking about her, she didn't become one, but she could have become a stereotype sort of in your book. How do you avoid doing that?
Yeah, I'm so glad you bring that up. So I love playing with stereotypes, particularly introducing someone as if they are and then showing the depth beneath them. And I think the way to do that, and I'm taking this from Marilyn Robinson. She was a professor of mine. And she said, you just actually have to love your characters, even the villains. And that means so much on so many levels. But one thing it means for sure is to just honor the complexity of that person. So yes, Moon is sort of a stereotypical young hippie river guide, but she's so much more. Yeah. And once I got to know the characters and ask them questions like, well, what are you afraid of? What do you really want? What are you running from? What's in the future for you? Then no one's a stereotype. Then everyone's complex once we get beneath the surface. So yeah, I've always had fun playing with that, with this book and with my last.
Yeah. You seem to genuinely like the characters in your book. And certainly they're very recognizable, I think, to any. I came from a small town. Anybody who lived in a small rural town would kind of recognize them. But some of the people that are sort of lesser people in the book, you certainly don't treat them that way. You genuinely seem to like the hardware store owner.
Yeah, Grandpa Birdie. He was fun.
And the local mechanic.
Yeah, Smitty. Yeah, they're super fun to write. You know, they're characters. So I've lived in small towns just about my entire life, and I still do. So I do love and I do like the people in them. And there are characters, and they're rich, and there's fun. There are funny things that are said in hardware stores. So when I started writing about the hardware store where Swami goes to pick up some paint, and this guy whose name is Birdie is back there, he just sort of raised his hand and said, "You know what? I have a story to tell, Andy." I'm like, "Well, Birdie, tell it, man." So he just goes off in front of the kids about the time he, you know, had a bear break into his trailer house and took care of it with what he calls a pump gun, right? So it was a really fun opportunity to just tell that story. And yeah, Birdie had one. Birdie absolutely had one.
And the local mechanic reminded me a lot of the local mechanic. Roy Scott, rest his soul, was the guy that you would sometimes go down to the garage just to talk to Roy.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And so the character Sam sort of has that experience with this mechanic, Smitty. And I grew up in a small town that had an old school mechanic shop. You know, there was one gas pump. Someone would still come out and pump your gas and check your oil. And you could give them a little extra for a Pepsi and a Snickers bar if you wanted. You know, they had one automotive bay. But that's not the kind of place you go for, like, really quick service, right? But there's other value there. So Sam had that experience, too. Like, this is taking far too long, this discussion with this mechanic about parts. And yet, I like it here. I like sitting in this job. Yeah.
Oh. Andrew Graff, our guest today, his latest novel is entitled True North. It's a dandy set in Wisconsin, in northern Wisconsin. It's ostensibly a little bit about getting started in a new business where you're involved with rafting, but it's about relationships, the environment comes into play. There are all kinds of things going on there. And it's great talking with him about it. Questions for him, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Andrew Graff, and his book is titled True North. You may have heard his book read on The Raft of Stars, which is his first book, another dandy, read on Chapter a Day not that far back. So it's great to have him with us today to talk about True North. Questions or comments, give a call. The number 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Got an email asking how much of the book is autobiographical. It sounds like a lot.
Yeah, I think in some ways, you know, every novelist is writing about life, right? It's just sort of the what else could we write about but our preoccupations, you know? This one, you know, none of the characters are based on real people. Not Sam, not Swami, none of the major or minor characters. But it's definitely about home, and it's definitely about family, and a very common experience that we've all had. You know, the one aspect that I wasn't able to rename was the Piers Gorge section of the river itself. So the whole book takes place in the fictional county of Maragami County. But when it came to naming the river and the rapids that this woodchuck rafting company operates on, it just wouldn't let me give it a different name. You know, it's Piers Gorge, and the rapids have the right names in the right order. So there's a scene in the book where Uncle Chip takes Sam downriver and shows him the ropes from Mishicot Falls to Volkswagen Rock to the Twin Sisters. You can go rafting in northern Wisconsin on the Piers Gorge River, or Piers Gorge section of the Menominee, and experience the rapids exactly as they are in true north.
You do such a wonderful job describing that part where Chip is telling Sam about, you know, what to avoid and what not to avoid. And what's the term you use? Is it giving up?
Yeah. Give up, stir up.
Yeah.
Give up and stir up. Yeah. Yeah.
Giving up. And what is the other part of it?
Squaring up.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Give up. So the river has become this great metaphor in my life, you know, and I've rafted since 2004. And I hope to raft for many years to come, but it's not the thrill that brings me back, but it's rather just the art of the river and its lessons. So one of the greatest lessons, from the river that I was able to bring into this book is the term give up and square up. It's a term they taught us in West Virginia, and drilled into us in training. Give up, square up, give up, square up. And what it means is, if you're running sideways, paddling with all you've got away from some big hazard downstream, some big hole that you do not want to hit, and it becomes apparent that you are going to hit that boulder, then that term, give up, that phrase, give up and square up, comes to mind. What it means is you give up trying to run away, and you square your boat up downriver, pointing at the hazard. And it's this ultimate radical acceptance of reality, that balance of expectations versus reality. I expect not to hit that big rock. I don't want to hit that big rock, but I am. So if I'm going to hit it, I may as well give up and square up to it. So it was really fun to ask, well, what does it mean to give up and square up in other aspects of life? Things like starting a small business. What does it mean to give up and square up in a relationship, right? When those boulders and obstacles come. That was a really fun metaphor to begin to ask of other aspects of Sam's and Swami's lives.
Do you ever have one? Well, you probably had many times where you had to square up.
Absolutely.
On the water.
I had one.
Give me an example.
No, I was just telling my family, I went down for my first rafting run last week on the New River, and I ended up flipping my entire boat in a class 5 rapid called Double Z. And it was my first run of the season, and I was out in the middle of the current, and I got pushed in front of a big boulder. And you know what? I failed to square up. I really did. I hit it sideways, and then I remembered as we were flipping and going over, I just said, "Oh yes, that's right. I forgot my own favorite phrase." Yeah, yeah, yeah. It happens. It's part of it for sure.
Well, the conflicts between Sam and Swami. By the way, how'd you come up with the name Swami?
So Swami's dad is the one who came up with Swami's name. And back in the 60s, Swami's dad wanted to give up the Chicago suburban life, and he wanted to move out to Southern California and become a surfer. He started reading surfing magazines. So when she was born, he named her after one of the famous surf breaks out there. And they went out there, you know, they called it avocado dreaming, and he had these big visions, but it didn't work out. And they all ended up having to get in a station wagon and drive back across the country, broke. So yeah, even Swami's father had that sort of vision versus reality thing come in. It was baked into her name.
That and that, I think that whole business of that part of her life sort of set her along a certain path.
It did. So she has those memories of being on a beach with the sun on her back, bare feet, seagulls in the air, and it was good. However, that vision to go out to California also, like, completely, it made them completely broke.
Yeah,
they failed at it, and they had to move back with not much. And her mom had to rise up and sort of become a breadwinner in that family. So Swami, even though she loved that space, it was good. She was also hit with these really practical repercussions that made her stop dreaming, made her think that wasn't okay. We just need to be practical and get the job done. That personality trait definitely bumps up against her husband's during the course of the novel.
Yeah, communication between the two of them. I thought you did a nice job. I mean, they were both miscommunicating, it seemed like to me.
Yeah, absolutely. They had trouble. And, you know, just the way life showed up. So, you know, Sam is maybe going to lose his teaching position. They don't have much money. They have kids. Their marriage is sort of rocky. And he rubs his hands together and says, I have a plan, right? Like, let's live in a camper. That will fix everything. He's got this dream. Yeah. But to communicate that dream and then to actually live in a camper and keep communicating that dream became very difficult for Sam and his wife out there. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to tell you, Swami was difficult for me to like. And I thought, well, maybe it's because I'm a man. I asked Jill, executive producer, she'd read the book and really enjoyed it too, but she said, I had a hard time with Swami. It made her difficult.
That's definitely fair. That's fair. And I've heard many others share that same experience, you know? Swami has to give up a lot of control if she is to thrive in this new environment. That's sort of her journey. And Sam has to gain control, you know, kind of come down out of the clouds a little bit. To be fair, one reviewer did say of Sam, he said, Sam is going to remind a lot of women of their first husband. So, you know, they both have their shortcomings, to be sure. Yes.
You know, while she is a strong person in a lot of ways.
She is.
And actually, now that you're talking about, now that I'm thinking about it, there the women in the book, and there's more than one, more than Moon. There's the mother, whose mother? Randy's mother, was it?
Debbie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very strong. I mean, these are strong women.
They are. And I, you know, when I think back to my childhood in the 90s in the Northwoods, with this novel and with Raft of Stars, the women I knew and know were strong and are strong. And you know, I've thought about this too. You know, why are the men sort of bumbling in a lot of my stories and the women are not? Maybe I think that just comes from an impulse that it's easier to pick on my own kind, you know? Like I'd rather have a bumbling male character and explore that. But to be frank, yeah, it just comes from a reality that I experienced. You know, Debbie is out there. She's a widow, and she's gardening, and she's farming, and she's hunting, and she's providing. She's also a bit of a prepper. That was fun to explore. Well, she's not a bit of a prepper. She's a lot of a prepper. But yeah, I met these women. You know, I've met them.
Yeah, I have too. How much attention do you pay to? You mentioned reviews. Do you pay much attention to reviews?
This is my second book, so I'm kind of new to this whole thing. I'm appreciative of anyone who reads anything I write. Like the whole process has been one I'm grateful for. I think with this one, I definitely paid attention to the reviews. Until I stopped being scared. It was like my sophomore novel. So I just thought, man, is anyone ever going to want to read this one the way they wanted to read Raft of Stars? So once it became clear that at least a few people had and they enjoyed it well enough, I was super content.
I haven't read any of the reviews, so I'm glad there's some good ones out there because yeah. I really liked it. That's for sure. And Marilyn did too. We got an email from Marilyn. She just finished reading True North and loved it. Marilyn said she didn't want to take it back to the library. She wanted to hang on to it. And she says that you made the authors, the characters so real that she found herself telling the couple to figure things out.
Oh, that's good, Marilyn. Marilyn, thank you so much. And I was trying to tell the characters that too. Yeah, figure it out, right? So I was rooting for them. I didn't know exactly how their summer would go, but I was definitely rooting for them as they went.
Yeah, she also noted that, you know, just learning things about the river and Piers Gorge, and also says thanks for Raft of Stars and now for True North. Please keep writing, she said.
Thank you for that, Marilyn, so much. I will and I am. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm with her on that. Regret plays a part in the story for a number of characters in the book. Did you plan were those themes kind of planned or did they just sort of evolve as you wrote?
Those just sort of came in as I wrote. You know, I was thinking primarily about plot, like what's a big marital problem that can get this family with their young kids in at least through a few chapters. And I knew I wanted to write about the river. But regret did start to come in, particularly through characters like Uncle Chip. You know, he's further along in life. He's definitely suffered his own losses. Yes, he's had a beautiful life in that he got to spend it outdoors on a river with a river as his best friend. But you know, he had a marriage that failed, and he had regrets, and he had questions about whether he could have done things differently. I think it's a story about a family, and I think many of us share this: the idea that if we just pack it all up and move somewhere else, we can start living a different story. I think that's a very a common desire or daydream for many. Yeah. However, when we get there, we're still there, you know? So this idea of sort of being middle life and asking, is this the story that we want to be living? And do I have any regrets? Yeah, are there paths that I should have taken and have not? So those sort of showed up, you know, once I just started asking the characters, who are you? What was your life like? Yeah, regret just sort of showed up, probably like it does for all of us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Laura in Coleman, Wisconsin, was just south of Krivitz. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
And what's
on? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to say I did read the Raft of Stars, and it was the chapter a day book, and then I went and got the book and read it. Then when the new one came out, I read that one, and we really enjoyed it. I had my husband read the first book. He hasn't read the second one yet, but I am recommending it also to our book club. And I just want to say I really appreciate the fact that he talks about northern Wisconsin. I got all excited when he mentioned Krivitz because we're just south of Krivitz. And then I have a theory I want to throw past him, if I may.
Sure.
The Marigami County. I know that's a fictional county, but did you get that? Did you come up with that by combining Marinette and Outagamie?
Oh,
without a doubt, Laura. Yes. Yeah, so thank you, Laura, so much from Coleman. Yes, that is the origin of the name of this fictional county. You know, my sort of home turf extends from, I would say, Appleton area, Fox Valley, up through Krivitz into Iron Mountain, Kingsford, Marinette, and then up to like the Porcupine Mountains in the UP. So that was the landscape that I draw from for Marigami County. And yeah, absolutely. Your theory is correct. Laura, I wanted to say too, thanks so much for reading and recommending it to your book club. I'll say to your book club and any others, I'm always so happy to meet, even via Zoom, with book clubs. That's been one of the greatest joys. So if that's of interest to you and your club, I'd be happy to just reach out through my website. It'd be great to meet you guys.
Yeah. Laura, there you go. A great opportunity there. Thank you very much for calling. You can call in too. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Having some fun talking with author Andrew Graff about his book. It's titled True North. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. And if you type in Andrew Graff, Raft of Stars, or True North, it's going to pop up, and you're going to, if you did want to contact him, it's pretty easy to get a hold of him. Just type in his name, and it'll probably pop up. I had another question here that it suddenly flew out of my brain, but now I think I've got it back. There are so many other things that are going on in this. All right, so they go to north in this Winnebago, and they get up there and they find the woodchuck rafters are not in great shape. So that's one thing, but there's also sort of there's a mining company involved. There's and I think, you know, there's where community kind of comes in. I mean, and it's something that folks in northern Wisconsin and other places have had to, I don't know if deal with this is the right stage here, but you've got a big company, there's job offers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Two of the obstacles that came their way, Sam and Swami's way, were the competitors to Woodchuck Rafting Company. So Woodchuck, as you said, is rough around the edges. It's a small old outfit that never had any competition, but now there is competition in town, right? And they've got a flashy new bus. And it's 1990s, so they're all like, you know, Juicy Fruit Gum, Mountain Dew commercial, and they're with it, you know, this new company. They're a real threat. So there's competition on the river, but then there's also a threat or competition with the river itself. An exploratory mining company is exploring the riverbanks along the Menominee River. And they're buying up land and maybe threatening the future of the river itself. However, in a small town, I grew up in the Northwoods, good paying jobs can be hard to find, right? So a community has to balance. Yeah, there's an economic reality here where we will support our families how we can. And there's also these environmental concerns of is this way of supporting our families going to damage the environment itself and make this place inhospitable? It was fun to go back and look at environmentalism in the early 1990s. You know, so the book takes place in 1993. There was a historic flood in the Midwest. I remember it as a kid. I remember the Menominee River being sandbagged along the banks. And I remember footage of Al Gore riding in a duck boat through Grafton, Illinois. So it was fun to go back and look at, you know, the old Earth Day speeches from the early 90s and to go watch old C-SPAN footage of Gore and Clinton in their first term. Yeah.
Yeah, and I assume that's why you chose 1993, or did you have that in mind? And
it was sort of a happy mistake, actually. So Raft of Stars takes place in 1994. This one takes place in 1993. I am working on something new that is going to take place in 1995. I'm kind of stuck in the Northwoods still, you know? It hasn't felt stale to me yet, so I don't know if I'm just going to spend the next 20 years writing the entirety of the 1990s in Maragami County, but as long as it feels fresh and fun to me, I'll definitely keep going in that direction. But the year of 1993 made a lot of sense. You know, the landscape itself started lending momentum to the narrative, the landscape and the year. So you've got this family on the rocks, this business with too much competition, this community that doesn't know what they're going to do with this mining company and these jobs. And as the novel goes on and the rainy season comes, the river itself begins to raise and lift and flood.
Yeah, there is a lot going on in the book, and it's plots. I mean, you know, there's something new around every corner or every chapter, kind of, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I like loud plots, you know, and I think some of that comes from my early writing experiences. I mentioned that I spent 7 years working on a book about my time in the Air Force. And that one never sold. And the reason why is that the editor said, man, you have written a really long, really boring novel. And I cried in my pickup truck with that news. You know, it was just north of Green Bay, of all places. I just let it rip on the highway and mourned the loss of my project. So when I re-entered writing and wrote Raft of Stars and now Thunderwater, I pay attention to plot. I really do. I don't forget that, oh wait, what I'm trying to do is tell a story. I'm not trying to write an essay. If, you know, essays have their place and thesis statements are good, but storytelling's not the place for that. So yes, I absolutely pay attention to plot and try to keep the stories moving.
One of the characters in the novel, and I'm not gonna say who, dies.
Yes.
How'd you make that decision?
Yeah, I'm not going to say who either, but it just, okay, so I mentioned before that characters sort of volunteer themselves for things. You know, once you get to know them, once you get to know their lives and their histories, they volunteer to say things, do things, tell a story about a black bear that broke into their home. Whatever. This character's life, it, it just sort of became apparent that this was going to be the outcome. I didn't know it going in, but about midway through, it's like, yeah, this is going to be a final river season in this sense. Yeah.
It was interesting to me. I was surprised at first when I read it, and then I thought, no, this is fitting that this person, in a way, passes on. We haven't talked at all about the kids in the children in the story who are present, kind of almost front and center a lot. Darren, you know, is getting to be a little bit. Well, he's growing up a bit, and he gets this compass. And does that, well, what does it symbolize in the book, and how it relates to the, does it, it has to relate to the title some way.
Yeah, absolutely. So the whole family needs to find, figuratively speaking, their true north. You know, we've already talked about how they come up against it in terms of the business and what's going on in the community and their marriage. So they have to decide what is our true north? Where am I as an individual and I am, as a part of this family, going to point? What's going to matter most? So these kids, these three kids, there's the boy Darren and then his little sisters Del and Deidre. And they, like kids often do, I think, can feel a bit pushed to the periphery from the adult world. When Swami and Sam are so caught up trying to just keep this business and family afloat, it's the kids who kind of get forgotten, right? So Swami and Sam both have moments in this book where they have to question that. They have to question, am I scrambling so hard to keep this thing afloat that I'm the one who's going to overturn the boat and sink it, right? So a turn back to those kids. And you're right. Darren does have a compass on a lanyard that he wears around his neck. And that was fun to just watch a 10-year-old kid use a compass on a road trip, right? Like, hey, mom, we're headed east now, you know, with a map in our lap. But it was also fun to begin to integrate that. Well, what happens when that compass breaks? Do we get a new one? Do we not? Those kids mattered. And I would say those kids in the end mattered most.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, you got a new book. You're working on another book.
I am. It's early stages, but it's coming, and I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll be looking forward to talking with you about it when it comes out. I know it's going to be good. Thank you
so much.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been a real pleasure. And I'm sure we'll be talking about your next novel. This, both your first two published are great books, and it's been a joy and pleasure for me to talk with you. Thank you so much.
I can't thank you enough. Thank you.
Andrew Graff is the author of Raft of Stars, first, and this book that we talked about today, True North, a novel, and a really fun novel to read. And I want to thank you for listening, and of course, thank all of our crew, our guests today, and also our production folks, Jeff Robbins, Lee Rayburn, Joel Patnon, Clara Neipert, and Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller.